KALW.
The variation in vaccine confidence can be hyperlocal, and it's not enough to just choose a geography or a race and ethnicity.
The California Department of Health is doing a big outreach push before the holidays to get more people vaccinated and boosted.
That may be through door knocking, through text banking, through phone banking, through canvassing, to make sure that there's no deserts.
We'll hear from the Deputy Director of Health Equity. Then, what happens when a wild turkey lands on a prison yard?
It kicked my ass not once, but twice. I'm not going to go down a third time because I've got a reputation to protect.
And Berkeley author Grant Faulkner reads from his new collection of stories. That's coming up. I'm Hanat Baba, and this is Cross Currents. It's almost the Thanksgiving holiday, and one thing the state is trying to do this week is get more people vaccinated, both first-time shots and with boosters. And vaccine equity is a big concern. Just half of Black and Latinx Californians are getting shots, whereas the number for Asian Americans is nearly 82% fully vaccinated. Today, we're bringing you a conversation from our friends at CAP Radio about efforts to make the vaccine easily available for everyone. Dr. Rohan Radhakrishna is the Deputy Director of the Office of Health Equity at the California Department of Public Health. He spoke with CAP Radio's Randall White.
Has your office determined the causes for the disparity in vaccine rates?
Within California, we're doing better than many states, but there is still work ahead, especially with the holidays upcoming. So we're pursuing a variety of strategies that have worked earlier in the pandemic to minimize inequities and continue to infuse new things that we learn on the ground every week to ensure that all Californians get vaccinated before the holidays and we leave no community behind, whether that's by place, by race and ethnicity, or by insurance type.
What are some of those strategies? How do you determine where to provide vaccination sites or maybe the hours of operation? Any barriers that could keep some people from getting their shot?
We take a hyper-local approach and have a variety of geospatial tools to really help us hotspot where there's a large volume of people, lower vaccination rates, and we can really slice and dice the data according to a variety of variables. This then allows us to focus, as we call it, both our air game and our ground game to get the message out about vaccination opportunities, but also to focus who we're reaching. That may be through door knocking, through text banking, through phone banking, through canvassing, to make sure that there's no deserts, no map spots in California where we're not reaching out to.
Dr. Rohan, where are you seeing the most vaccine hesitancy? A report by NBC News shows Latinos in Orange County have some of the lowest vaccination rates statewide at just 22%. What is your office doing to address places like this where the numbers show such a real challenge?
As you mentioned, the variation in vaccine confidence can be hyperlocal, and it's not enough to just choose a geography or a race and ethnicity. You need to get more specific. You need to also look at age group, because if you're focused on Latinos being further behind, you need to look at the difference between first shots versus boosters. You need to look at the difference between Latinos who are 65 plus versus those who are in the youth age group to really hyper-focus your message.
You mentioned different age groups. What are we seeing in terms of younger children, 5 to 11, getting the shots? What are the numbers starting to show there?
This is a turning point in our fight against the pandemic to bring on board the 5 to 11-year-olds. We've had over 100,000 already in California vaccinated. And as we've seen with other age groups that come on board, some people are in the watch and wait category, and that's okay. But before the holidays, we're taking a household approach to ensure that everyone has the maximum immunity before these holiday gatherings.
That was Dr. Rohan Radhakrishna with the California Department of Public Health speaking with CAP Radio's Randall White. You can hear more of our vaccine reporting at KALW.org. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hanat Baba. Thanksgiving's coming, and while a lot of turkeys end up on plates, there are some turkeys that fly free, even in some unexpected places. Our next segment comes from the KALW podcast Uncuffed, created by people in California prisons. In this special Thanksgiving episode from the archives, Spoon Jackson and Joe Kirk present the story of a turkey that landed itself in Solano State Prison.
Today we are bringing you a bonus episode for Thanksgiving about the turkey that invaded a building over there on D Yard. And this story resonates with me, Spoon Jackson of Uncuffed, because when I was at New Folsom, I helped raise three families of wild geese, and the pleasure it gave me to raise those geese and have them accept me as a part of their family was a miracle. Because I used to also, on lockdown, I used to look out the window and see flocks of turkeys going up and down the road right outside the fence, because they had fencing close enough where you could watch wildlife out there. I saw turkeys, I saw deers, I saw coyotes, I saw wild dogs. Therefore, when I heard about Kirk's story of a turkey going into D Yard and then ending up in a building, it amazed me. This is Joe Kirk, who produced the story.
About a turkey who has a lot to be thankful for.
George Washington versus the British. David versus Goliath. Ali versus Frazier. These are just a few of the great battles throughout history. Today we at Uncuffed are presenting you with a story about a man versus a turkey. I sat down with Brian Mazza and Joseph Kaufman and let them tell me all about it.
You know, Joe, I wanted to ask you, man. Remember that time? I think it was about Thanksgiving last year.
Somewhere around.
Saw that turkey on the yard.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, is that turkey inside the fence line? Because I couldn't even fathom. How's the turkey going to get inside the fence?
You know, they can fly a little bit.
I had no idea
that turkeys
can fly.
Yeah, I didn't expect one to be there on the yard, though. Yeah. You said, let's get it! And you took off running. And I was just started laughing. And then I followed you. But I walked and you ran. And when you got to the fence, the turkey was scared out of his wits. And it didn't know what to do. So it took off running into Building 23.
I lived in that building too. And I ran inside the building and said, stop that turkey. I'm going to have him for lunch. And everybody in the building was just looking at me. And I ran up the stairs and the turkey landed on the railing in front of the showers. There's like five people in the showers and the turkey's looking in the shower. He's looking at me. He's looking in the shower. He's looking at me. And people were in the showers going, no, don't do it. I grabbed the turkey and feathers just came out of it. Because I didn't want to hurt it, but feathers just came out of its wings.
There were feathers everywhere. Yeah.
There are feathers everywhere.
What I saw was the turkey looking into the shower, and the turkey looks at Brian, and then it takes off down the tier. So now the turkey is running for its life down the tier, and here comes Brian running after it, and the turkey scrambles up against the wall and at the corner of the corner of the tier. And that was, I just started laughing at that point. I was laughing so much. Everyone was laughing.
I almost fell down. The turkey ran into the wall because they're fast too. I didn't know they were that fast.
It was pretty quick.
Yeah. It could fly. It was fast. I was learning as I went along there. The turkey ran, but its claws cannot get any kind of traction on the linoleum. And it slipped right into the wall of 20 dorm, right into the cinder block wall. And then the turkey runs down the tier into 24 dorm. And down there was that guy. Remember his name? What was his name? he was the big skinhead with Hitler tattooed on him and everything else. I forget. He was the toughest guy in the whole yard, right? And the turkey ran into his bed area and woke him up. And he stood up like one of those things. You ever see the cartoons where somebody stands up and runs in place and then takes off and there's like little air pockets behind him? Well, that's what he did, right? And he took off out of the dorm. I ran into the dorm, and I'll tell you something. The turkey was hiding under the bed, and it was between the locker and the wall. And I look, I bend down, I get on my hands and knees, and I'm looking, and the turkey's peeking at me from around the corner, seeing me. And I go, all right, I don't want to hurt him. That's one thing I don't want to do. I'm thinking animal lover, a conservationist. That was probably my main reason why I started chasing the turkey to begin with, was because I didn't want it to get hurt. So here I am, I'm gonna stick to that theme. So I reach underneath the bed and I'm reaching my arm and I finally grabbed a hold of its wing and dragged it out. And then I discovered something new. They can fly, they're fast, and they're mean as hell.
How about strong? Are they strong?
It was a 12-pound bird. It's unbelievable how strong birds are. So I grab it, right? I'm still trying not to grab its neck or, you know, these things, right? And the bird's caw-caw started flapping its wings and it just kicked the shit out of me. I dropped it on the ground and fell back and it ran underneath the bed again. I'm thinking to myself, Jesus, that's a strong bird. I was like, wow, everybody's laughing.
Lucky it didn't slice you open.
It didn't slice me open. Lucky for me, because I didn't know that part either. They're very aggressive, mean birds. But for some reason, this one gave me a break. So I dive underneath the bed again, and I grab him by his leg this time, and it just, I had it by the leg, and it was trying to flap, and this is people's bed area. It's clean, it's orderly, it's supposed to be quiet. There's feathers everywhere in that dorm, fluttering, flying around. Indians were going, hey, these are nice feathers. Everybody, Mexicans, everybody was coming to get the feathers. And I go, I grabbed the bird, and finally I grabbed it by its neck because, you know what? It kicked my ass not once but twice. I'm not going to have it go down a third time because I've got a reputation to protect, right? So I grabbed the turkey by the neck, and I grabbed him by his leg, and there I was stretching him out so he couldn't kick or flap on me, and I carried him out of the building, and I'm thinking, what am I going to do with this turkey now, right?
The whole building was like caught in suspense. Because we were all just wondering what's going to happen. And it was taking a long time. I was like, everyone was really curious. And then finally you came down the stairs holding this turkey like a trophy, but away from you, like it was like a dangerous trophy.
It was dangerous.
That part was hilarious too. But the whole building was just quiet, if I remember right, when you were bringing the turkey down.
I had my bruises and a couple scrapes. You know what I mean? It was a hard-fought battle. And I finally got the bird outside. And then I don't know what I'm going to do. What am I going to do? Because, believe it or not, all the feathers I tore out of the tail and I tore out of the wings. The bird wasn't going to be able to fly out. So I'm thinking, what am I going to do? Throw the thing back over the fence? Or what am I going to do? So I walked towards where the cops were at in front of the center complex. And I go, I don't know what we're going to do with this bird, right? And they go, well, We'll just carry it outside, but we'll go get Lamb, Officer Lamb. So I sit down at the picnic table, and I'm thinking, man, maybe the bird will stay still. So I set him down on top of the picnic table.
Feather explosion.
That's when I started getting my ass kicked for the third time because it was flapping and it was making these noises. And I had to grab it because I didn't want it to get away again. So that was three ass whippings I took from the turkey. And I finally said, here, I gave the turkey over to Lamb and he took the bird out, took it out and put it out in the parking lot in front of the prison and let it go.
Yeah, you paroled it. paroled the turkey.
The turkey got an early parole.
I think that they release feathers when they're scared as a defense mechanism because the third time,
right,
there were feathers flying everywhere again. People were running around picking them up. Yay, feathers.
That's cool. You know, I learned on the fly. I'm not an ornithologist by a far sight. At the end of the day, I was glad that I caught it, but I still have people coming up and talking to me, hey, turkey man, and I don't mind that at all. If everybody's going to have a laugh, then I'm happy about it.
All right, turkey man.
This story was produced by Joe Kirk. Do you think the bird was abused by Mr. Mazda chasing it around in the building?
See, the whole reason I really wanted to do this story because one thing Brian Mazda, the guy who told the story, he tells a really good story. And it pretty much told itself. I barely had to do any editing on this. And the other thing is that it's a funny story, but one of the things that made me think about it is I love animals, and this turkey got spared because in prison, you don't get the best food in the world. You know, we don't get a lot of real meat. And this turkey, he being on the prison yard, he was a goner. If he would have stuck around, if Mazda wouldn't have got him off there, somebody was going to eat that turkey.
Well, I don't know about that. I've been down all this time, and I haven't yet to see somebody catch a turkey, but pigeons... Yeah. It's another story. Pigeon is good eating, though. I have to admit that. Yeah. I used to raise pigeons on the streets to eat.
Yep.
Happy Thanksgiving to you all. And I don't know if I should be asking you about eating all the turkey you can. But I love turkey, and I must admit, on the streets, I took part in many turkey gatherings and eating. And so I hope you all have a fabulous Thanksgiving. And this is Uncuffed Spoon Jackson, Night of Realness, and Joe Kirk.
The hobo, the heavy metal hobo.
That episode was produced by Joe Kirk, a former producer for Uncuffed who is no longer in prison. Uncuffed is supported by the California Arts Council and the Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation. The producers fact-check content to the best of their ability, and all content is approved by an information officer. You can download the Uncuffed podcast for more great stories from the inside on your podcast player. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. Next, we're going to hear from a Berkeley author in KALW's literary podcast, New Arrivals.
This is New Arrivals, a pocket-sized book tour with Bay Area authors. I'm Lisa Morehouse. Grant Faulkner lives in Berkeley. His book, All the Comfort Sin Can Provide, came out in August.
The topic of the book covers the title, really. All the comfort sin can provide holds a question. How much, if any, comfort does sin provide? I have this story, Morphine Drip, which is one of my favorites. And it is a 100-word story, and it actually includes the genesis of the title for the book as well. So here it is, Morphine Drip. "It's what we remember," he said, as if clinging to a frayed thread tossed to a man overboard in a storm. Outside a few parked cars, inside a dim bluish light. Frogs croaking in the woods, jinrikis under an August moon, the violet night. He said something about a boy named Jim, his pants down to his ankles, his tuxedo shirt unbuttoned, long baby hairs on smooth cheeks. "Never underestimate the comfort sin can provide," he said. "A lifetime of bedtime stories all to your lonesome." Skin crinkled around his eyes, his dry lips pressed feebly around a straw.
That was Grant Faulkner reading from All the Comfort Sin Can Provide.
New Arrivals is produced by Lisa Morehouse, and you can find more readings from Bay Area authors at kalw.org/newarrivals. Tune into Cross Currents tomorrow at 5. We'll meet a Muslim convert who felt her access to God was being limited by people.
I couldn't talk to the imam in the mosque. It was like men could talk. Men talked to him all the time. He'd be standing up there, they'd be laughing at some joke. Men would talk to him. Women, no.
A new story from Becoming Muslim from the Spiritual Edge tomorrow at 5. And before we go, here's some new music from a Bay Area band. This is the Bobby Young Project, an Oakland-based band that'll be playing in their city tonight at Eli's Mile High Club.
Wait a minute, baby. Got to tell you that you're wrong. You're headed to a place where you don't belong. I hear stuff about the things I do. You're cussing and a fussing, making up all the rules. I bet a dollar to your dime at this time. I won't be your fool.
Today's Cross Currents team includes Nina Gensler-Debs, Jessica Plachek, Andrew Stelzer, Eli Wirtschafter, James Rollins, Gabe Graben, Victor Tenz, Shireen Adil, Sunni Khalid, and Ben Trefney. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet, as interpreted by Daoud Anthony. For Cross Currents, I'm Hanat Baba.
Got to let you know that my foot's coming down. Got a dollar to your dime that this time.